Shalom. Yesterday's shiur got cut off in middle, even though we were really out of time. So, Bezrat Hashem, hope to complete the topics that we didn't get a chance to discuss. Okay, just wanted to start with a correction, and maybe just a slower elucidation. We had discussed the question of both generally using unimmersed kalim in someone's house, or more specifically, in a restaurant or hotel setting. And we had mentioned that Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very limited leniency to use either metal or glass plates that the food was placed on. I don't think he would actually allow putting the food on the plates, but once it's presented, to be able to take it off. But he explicitly writes that it can only be done by hand or with some plastic utensil that is not chayiv and tevila. And we had mentioned that there might have been a basis for additional leniencies if it's considered just emptying out the kli, based on a discussion that is brought up in terms of buying foods that have packaging, like a Snapple bottle or a tuna fish can, that maybe that would allow the act of emptying it out, and that would be even liquids, where Moshe's cool only applied to solids. But then again, that wouldn't necessarily allow using a non-toviled spoon or fork or knife. We had also mentioned the angle for leniency of the Beis Avi, that since the Chiyuv Tevila is only on the owner of the Kli and not on the user, and even though it's explicit in Shulchan Aruch that a Shoel or a Socher is also Chayiv, but there at least is some kind of monetary kinyan and therefore some kind of obligation on them as well. And again, it's implicit from Rav Moshe and other poskim as well that they didn't accept any of those leniencies. So that's something that's really relevant to all situations, or for those who don't allow it, relevant to all situations. But there's a specific angle for leniency concerning the restaurant, and that's what we elaborated on, that it's based on a whole series of assumptions concerning the ruling that if Reuven bought a kli not to use for food and then lent it to Shimon, so Shimon would not have to immerse it. That's debated. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins L'Kula and the Isvetar Paskins L'Chumra and the Taz Neshach recommend Chumra on that, to dip without a bracha. The poskim also quote that within the view of the Shulchan Aruch that would extend not only to a case where Reuven bought it for, let's say, to cut paper, for that non-food purpose, but even to sell to someone else, what they call klei schora, that's also not yet called the klei seuda. So in that kind of situation, according to the lenient ruling of Shulchan Aruch, if Reuven bought it to sell, and instead of selling it, he lent it or rented it out to Shimon, that Shimon would not be chayiv either. Once again, there too, according to the Sveheter, you would have to dip it, and the Taz and the Shach ruling to do so without a bracha. So if you should assume that the leniency concerning Reuven buying it for non-food purposes extends over to the situation where Reuven bought it to sell, which is debatable, because maybe to sell as a food kli is called a kli suda, but if you should assume that, so then we mentioned that several poskim, primarily the descendant of the Chassam Sofer, known as the Sheol Chuva Shevet Sofer, quoted by the Darkei Tshuva, extends that over to a restaurant or hotel kalim that consider that to be klei schora too, even though there the schora is, the business is to actually feed people on it and to make money off of it. But if we should assume that third assumption, number one, the idea that when Reuven buys it for non-food purposes and lends it or rents it to Shimon, Shimon's pater, and number two, that extends over to Reuven buying it for klei schora, and number three, to assume that when Reuven buys it for the purpose of serving people on it to make money, that's also called klei schora, and then the users, even if they're considered to be borrowers, would be pater from dipping it. So all those assumptions, the Shevet Sofer goes with, and therefore allows that, at least for glass. I have to check the tshuva inside whether he allows it for metal too, in a restaurant. So that would be a specific local leniency for that that would not apply in the home setting. We had mentioned that one of the poskim held away was Rav Shlomo Kluger in the Tuv Tam V'Das. I saw in Sfarim that he's actually quoted in the opposite way, that he doesn't allow that kula. So just a correction in that regard. Okay, we had summarized by the fact that all of these are creative leniencies and therefore are best avoided, but we did mention that it seems pretty common in Eretz Yisrael, and to some extent, I think some Ashgachos in America also rely on it. I think the OU does not. I think other Ashgachos do, on the not requiring Tefillas Kelim for restaurants or hotels based on this Svar of the Shevet Sofer. Okay, the last topic we had covered was further elaboration on materials. Just wanted to run through that in a smoother way for if it's more convenient to referencing section 2 in the packet, Chomer HaKli. So, of course, there are certain kalim that are not chayiv at all. Earthenware, at least the non-glazed variety. Wood, stone. I wrote on the packet that there's something called stoneware, which I think has a component of crushed stone. But when the poskim discuss stone, they're talking about literally stone kalim that dug out. They actually found them in archaeological digs. Usually you don't really have them anymore. Stoneware is actually a form of earthenware that they, for maybe durability or something, they think they crush in some crushed stone, but the primary ingredient is dirt, which is the primary ingredient in earthenware. So whether stoneware requires tefillah, it depends on the question of glaze, because typically stoneware, a lot of times I think you have that for like a crock pot. I think there's a glaze on the outside, and that depends on the issue of glaze, which is our next topic, just to elaborate on again. Rabbi Zimmerman spoke about this, I think, quite at length, just to review a certain nekudah, a certain point, that the Gemara tells us that earthenware that's lined by metal is chayiv and tvila. Many posts can maintain that it's only a rabbinic obligation, because it's not primarily metal. It's primarily something that's made out of something that's potter from Tevila, and they have the whole discussion of whether it has to be functional and not just for looks, for noi. So that's the question of when do you have such a guarantee? Is it do you need it on the inside and the outside, or is just the inside sufficient? And the bottom line is that we paskin that it's only if the inside and the outside make a bracha, and if it's on the inside you don't make a bracha, and if it's on the outside there's a debate whether you have to dip it all together.
Or to dip it without a bracha.
The Gemara doesn't explicitly talk about glass, so that most of the posts can extend over, but there is somewhat of a question. I think this might be pointed out by the Pre-Tohar, the Halacha Sefer written by the Baal Or HaChaim, of Chaim Ibn Attar, that maybe since glass is only the Rabbanan to start out with, maybe they didn't impose the rabbinic stringency on just the lining with respect to glass. So based on that, and maybe other factors too, some of which we'll see in a moment to review, even if it's totally glazed on the inside and the outside, even if you're going to require tefillah, you wouldn't make a bracha. So it is a discussion among the contemporary poskim, and I excerpted quite a bit from some contemporaries for him here, both the Ole Yeshurun and the Kosher Kitchen by Rabbi Forrest, starting with an oral ruling that's mentioned by the Ole Yeshurun from Moshe Feinstein, that our glaze is too thin to qualify for even a chiyuv tefillah altogether, just like a chazusa ba'alma, just a mare. Unlike the past, the earlier poskim were talking about a thicker layer of glass. So that's what the poskim debate, whether that svara should be relied on. Rabbi Forrest, for the whole discussion with the mumchim in one of the porcelain china, same thing, factories, which is glazed earthenware, basically, of sorts. Porcelain is not exactly earthenware, but it's in that family. So he really wants to conclude that you should dip it, but in the end, points out certain angles for leniency, and it says it should be dipped, but without a bracha. And we gave our own recommendations in terms of the fact that I thought it was a good idea, just to make everyone feel comfortable in our homes. Just wanted to note that the Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Yaivitz of Yaakov Emden that porcelain does not require tefillah. He speaks about it being smooth, but it's still earthenware. So it's very unclear, because it's hard to imagine that in the days of the Yaivitz, the china, which is porcelain, that was being sold, didn't have a glaze on it. So it sounds like the Yaivitz is being makel even with a glaze, but he never says that there's a glaze. He just says it feels like glass, but it's not actually glass. He's talking about the actual kli itself. So that's somewhat of a scientific question or metzias question of what the Ivitz was talking about. There's no absolute proof that the Ivitz would allow a glazed dish of porcelain to be potter from tevila, because it could be the Ivitz was just mistaken about the fact that what he thought was just the natural shine of the porcelain itself maybe it was actually a glaze, and had he known it was a glaze, he might have been mechayev it. In my research that I did a number of years ago on this, I think there is a type of china that is made in a way where it itself is shiny, and therefore they wouldn't glaze it. So it's possible that the Ayavitch was talking about that, but it's a little unclear. It's, again, hard to derive halacha lemaisa from that ruling if the Ayavitch does not directly address that there was a glass layer. Then we discuss the opposite case, where you have the inside side being chayiv and tefillah, like metal, and the outside side being a porcelain or earthenware-like substance. And that touches upon Teflon, which is plastic on the outside, and enamel, which is earthenware on the outside. The discussion there revolves around the following. Just as we said in terms of being chayiv and tefillah, if the inside side is putter, and let me say it better, if the inner layer is putter and the outer layer, meaning the lining, is chayiv, like the case of metal-lined earthenware, the case of Gemara, what's called clay kunya, so the lining has to be functional. If it's just lanoi, then it wouldn't be chayiv. So here, the discussion is the opposite, that if the putter substance is functional, then that should exempt the kli from tefillah. But if, on the other hand, it's just ornamental, so then it should remain just as chayiv. So that the discussion is to revolve around that. Again, it's hard to say that Teflon is just ornamental. It's certainly functional, but maybe an additional factor is the fact that it's so thin and oftentimes scratches off. Either way, it seems like the poskim tend toward to either being told with a bracha, that seems to be Moshe Feinstein's view, or being told without a bracha, which seems to be a pretty popular view, and that's in Lanius Daiti what I would recommend, and the same for enamel. That one could make a case that it's chayiv even with a bracha, assuming the enamel is only to make it prettier. But if it's functional, then it would be pater, so it would be safer to dip it without a bracha. Concerning new metals, so Rabbi Zimmerman discussed this at length, so I don't want to add to that. The three shitot about aluminum as an example of that, whether theoretically it should be totally pater because not mentioned by the Torah and it wasn't under the Gzeiris Chazal because the only goes on glass, so whether it should be chayiv derabanan with a bracha, or maybe even chayiv min haTorah included in the generality of metal. Interesting discussion about that in the poskim on a theoretical level as to how to read the psukim. Do we view it as shishak sub maboam keechad? The Torah listed all the metals and therefore it would exhaust the list. Or Moshe has such a svara. Or as Rav Sternbuch suggested, maybe here we can't say it's a shishak sub maboam keechad because it was actually a story. So it was not just a psak, but Elazar HaKoyen was actually telling the Jews that all these metals that you just found, and he listed all of them. So maybe you can't necessarily say that that list is dafka. Of course, you could ask why the Torah had to record that part of Elazar's speech if it's not Torah Lidoris. So, bottom line, there's a good case to exempt aluminum, and therefore it is safer to dip that with other things or without a bracha, but there are those who do require a bracha, including Rabbi Yashiv. Okay, concerning new glass, which I think is exactly where we left off. So, there are various newer glasses that are either new in the sense that they're more durable or new in the sense of being more heat resistant. So, when we learned Tefillah Kelim with Rabbi Tendler, so he pointed out that Pyrex and Duralex actually have an additional chemical in it that a typical glass doesn't necessarily have. It's noted by the Kosher Kitchen in page 3, in footnote 13 and 14. 13 actually, crystal is glass to which lead oxide has been added. Pyrex is glass to which borosilicate has been added to reduce its expansion when heated, meaning it shouldn't break. That's why Pyrex is typically used for pots that are glass. So the question is whether that additional chemical makes it not into glass. So Rabbi Tendler actually noted that the sand in Israel actually has that element of boron in it. So he didn't think that was such a convincing svara to exempt it, even though there are some poskim who say that you can only dip without a bracha. It seems like most svarim say that Pyrex and Doralex are chayiv with a bracha, that it's sufficiently similar to glass, as it is glass, and chemically, even though there's an additional chemical in it, but it's not really changed from being glass, and it also has the ability to be reformed. So bottom line, I think that that's pretty standard to make a bracha on those kinds of utensils. What is an open debate is about Corel and by extension Corningware. So in order to frame this debate, again, Rabbi Zimmerman also spoke about this from the Ola Yeshurun, but before we summarize that, just to add a wrinkle to it. So we know that the Gemara and the simpler reading, Rabbi Zimmerman quoted, possible to read it otherwise, but that even if you should assume that metal is Minatora, that glass is Darabanan, that the reason that the Chachamim ordained Tvila concerning glass is that it has a similar property to metal in the sense that Yeshlem Takonim Nishtabru, that you could fix them if they're broken and remake it. So based on a conversation with my Rabbi Willig in this, so Yeshlach Kor, what is the definition of halachic glass that's included in Hilchas Tvilas Kelim? Is it the fact that it's glass, and whatever is called glass is included? What motivated Chazal to be gozer tefillah on glass was its quality that makes it similar to metal, that namely when it's broken it could be reformed and made into glass again. But it wasn't the quality of being able to be reformed that is necessary in order for it to be chayiv. What's necessary in order to be chayiv is that it be glass. And a classic model we sometimes use in Lumdus is the what of the din and the why of the din. The why of the din we put into a black box and we don't open it anymore. But the what of the din is glass. The black box was why they were misaking that. Or you could say that no, they weren't misaking tvila on all glass. They were misaking tvila on glass that can be broken, that when it's broken can be reformed. And if you had a glass that cannot be reformed, so then it's not going to be chayiv and tvila. So that is the chakira that one can ask. And if one assumes that we cannot really resolve that chakira, so any glass that cannot be reformed upon breaking would be considered suffik chayiv, or suffik glass with respect to this halacha. And one could suggest that since tvilas zchuchis is only derabanan, that we should be able to say suffik derabanan lakula on that, and therefore not dip it at all, not just without a bracha, but not at all. So if you look carefully in the footnotes in the Ola Yeshurun, that's exactly the point that he's raising. When he takes up the question of Karel and Corningware as to whether or not they should be dipped, so he refers you to a line in Sefer Tevilas Kelim, which I have on page 3 in Thors 13, that if you have a suffix in din as to whether or not a glass utensil is considered glass, or concerning earthenware that's lined, perhaps even with metal, because that's also derabanan according to perhaps most poskim, so then you don't have to dip it all together. So what the Ola Yeshurun is maintaining, I could be he asked Rav Moshe on this, I don't think that's actually quoted that way in the Sefer, but I think that's the way they quote it, that he asked Rav Moshe about this, that's considered suffer glass and therefore totally potter. And then in a later edition, he threw in that preferable to dip without a bracha. So although the Sefer Tevilas Kelim did not directly address Corningware and Karel, but he did address the idea of suffer glass, and Ray Willig helped me understand why it's called a suffer glass. So a little about the manufacture of Karel and Corningware in order to understand why it falls right into the category. Karel, which is of course a more durable kind of glass, but I think right now we have only like 3 plates left from the whole Karel set, because Israeli floors don't take too kindly to Karel either. So Karel is actually chemically glass, but I don't really understand what I'm about to say, but in my email correspondence with the Karel factory, so it's layered, where they like put the grains in a different way, I guess kind of like plywood, so it's more durable. So if a Karel plate breaks, it cannot classically be remelted and be remade into Karel without peeling the various layers apart from each other, which is, I guess, theoretically possible in industry, but very difficult to do. That's what the email correspondence generated. So based on that, I think we can understand better what this machlokas poskim is about, because Karel is chemically glass, but it does not have the breakability and remakeability criterion that the Gemara says was the motivator to have glass b'chayiv. So some poskim maintain, therefore, it's called a suffik glass and totally pater, and some poskim, including Rabbi Forst, maintains that it's vaday glass. Apparently, it goes by chemical properties and not by remakeability, and therefore states that Karel is chayiv tvila with a bracha. I thought, Lanias Daiti, that you cannot have absolute certainty on that in light of the fact that maybe the remakeability is crucial, and therefore I think that karel maximally should be dipped without a bracha, and again, some are willing to make it totally based on the fact that it's suffer glass. This is the Psak Rali Shurin, and I think he actually got that from Moshe Feinstein. Concerning Corningware, so in footnote 15 on page 3, so Rabbi Forrest quotes that Corningware dishes are made of clay that has properties of both glass and earthenware. It is thus difficult to render a definitive ruling regarding the requirement of tefillah, once you immerse them without reciting a bracha. In the somewhat significant research I did the years ago on this, so there's something called vitrification, which is the act of making glass. So basically, earthenware, plain pashut earthenware made out of clay, is very low on the vitrification scale. And then as you slowly move up, you get to porcelain, which is more glass-like, Corningware, which is even more glass-like, and glass, which is actual glass, moving up the vitrification scale. So the things in the middle are what I think they call scientifically semi-vitrified, hence semi-like glass. So I believe that's where Roy Forrest is putting Corningware into. Plus he notes in an essay in the back that if Corningware breaks, it actually can be remelted and made into Corningware. So here, in a sense, we have the opposite Hakira, where something that shares the property of glass, that it's remeltable, but not quite glass. It might be glass, but it's not quite glass. So therefore, a force considers it a suffix, and therefore wants to dip without a bracha. One could have made the case that since it's a suffix, to exempt it totally, because suffix to Rabban Lakula, and that seems to be the approach that the Ali Yeshurin is taking. Again, if my criterion is correct, since Karel dishes are served at the table, if one wants everyone to be comfortable at home, probably go to the dip without a bracha. Corningware maybe less so, because a lot of times it's used to cook in, but also sometimes used for serving. So, obviously one needs a psak on that. To frame again that which Rav Zimmerman spoke about at length, about the shaila whether plastic requires tefillah, at least a type of plastic that is remeltable. So, as we said, Yesh Lachor, when the Chachamim goes there on glass, where they goes there on anything that's called glass, even if it's theoretically not breakable and remakeable, where they goes there on all things that are remakeable, even if it's not glass, or where they only goes there on glass that is remakeable. So the Machmirim concerning plastic are at least being Choshesh for the a possibility that the goes are on all things that are remakeable. The ones who are being makel on these Suffolk glasses are assuming at least a solid possibility that they were only goes are on remakeable glass. And the ones who are choshish for all these things and to dip without a bracha are either by all these things, I mean, let's say maybe outside of plastic, but Ofer Karel and Corningware, a choshish that maybe the shame glass alone is enough to require it and don't want to apply the rule of Safik Darabon and Lakula. And that's the next major topic, which again, Rav Zimmerman introduced amply, but just to get involved in some more detail about that, is there are the two main rules that are mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch in terms of what is not called a clay suda. First is that if it doesn't touch the food, meaning a clay suda has to come into contact with the food. And the specific example mentioned by the Shulchan Aruch is a tripod, or the equivalent of a modern-day grate or rack where only pots go onto it. And the second rule is, we'll say it this way, even though it might be formulated somewhat differently, that it is not used for the final stages of the food. So something that by the time you're done using it, the food is still in an inedible state. So I wanted to elaborate on each of these rules in turn and give significant examples for each one. So the first rule, that if it doesn't touch the food, it's not called a clay suda. Again, the example given by the Shulchan Aruch is the tripod as opposed to a grate that you actually put food straight on. So that's in source 17. In source 18, that's in Sif Dalid. In source 18, you have Sif Hey, where the Ramah writes that a cover that you use to cover bread when it's baking also is not chayiv in tefillah. And Mefarshim explained, because it doesn't touch the bread. The same theoretically would be true for a pot lid, because it doesn't necessarily touch the food, but since it does because of the steam that goes up and down, so that is considered touching the food and greatly aiding in the cooking. So a pot lid is chayiv, min ha-Torah, if it's metal. But a lid on a solid food that's used in the baking, where it doesn't touch, is potter. So I wanted to elaborate on an important rule that has ramifications elsewhere in Tefillas Kelim, and that is the following. We'll start with the Chelukas Binyamin in source 19, on page 4, where he writes, from the Issa v'Heter, Aval im lefamim nogea ba'apas sorach tefillah. That even though the cover of bread is potter from tefillah, that's where it's put on top of the bread, where the bread doesn't actually touch. But if it occasionally does touch, then it will be chayiv in tefillah. So I'm just noting that this is doubly questionable and would certainly not be aliba de chuli alma as follows. Number one, a svara that I think I saw in one of the contemporary svarim, but I cannot identify where I saw it, that in lefamim nogea ba'pas sarach tvila, but that is not just an occasional, that's an incidental touch. When you put meat on top of a rack or soup in a pot to cook, it's supposed to touch. This lid that goes over the bread, maybe it's there to prevent, I don't know, maybe other kind of zeya or reach from making the bread fleshik or milchik or whatever. Whatever the reason is there, but it's not meant to touch. In lefamim nogea ba'pas, it doesn't really aid in the cooking by doing that. That's an incidental touch. And for an incidental touch to make you chayiv and tvila is a big chiddush. We'll see that later when we discuss corkscrews or can openers. So I thought, even though the Yisraveta does say it, but it would be hard to require tvila with a bracha based on that, and one could even make a case you're totally potter. Furthermore, there's a very important ruling of the Pri Chadash that runs as follows. The original context of the Pri Chadash and his first instantiation of this is where he writes explicitly that a tripod, where you, for the most part, this is in source 20, you put pats, but once in a while you'll put the food on itself. So the Pri Chadash says that azlinan bekli basar iker rov tashmisho. You follow the majority, and since the majority it's only meant to hold pots and not food, therefore it's totally potter. This Pri Chadash is quoted as the shita holding that you follow rov shimusho. And if rov shimusho is not in a way that characterizes it as kli suda, then the miyat shimush is not going to be enough to make it chayiv.
Bez Hashem, when you study the laws of Hagolas Kalim, Hetzer Kalim, so you'll see that there's a machlokas rishonim whether concerning that you follow rov shimusho. For example, if, let's say, a pot is generally used with liquid, which for kashering requires hagala, but occasionally it's used directly with dry food, which requires libun, since it went in dry. So the Pri Chadash actually says here that even according to those who don't follow rov shimusho when it comes to Hagala, Hechsher Kalim, because you have to kasher it according to the highest standard of the way the non-kosher food or problematic food for Pesach, the Chametz, went in. But when it comes to Tevilas Kalim, he suggests that all agree you follow Rosh Shimusho, because you have to define whether the Kli is a Kli Suda or not. And if it's not, you're Pater from Tevila, even though occasionally is used in a Kli Suda-like way.
So it seems that he is directly arguing on the Issa v'Heter, who says that if the lid over the bread occasionally touches the bread, that that would be chayiv. It seems like the Pri Chadash would argue on that, and that the Issa v'Heter, by contrast, would say that if you occasionally use the tripod to put food directly on, then it would be chayiv. Another arena which the Pri Chadash actually, in this case, debates the Ramah, also based on an Issa v'Heter, so I guess you could say it's the Issa v'Heter l'shitaso that he's arguing on here as well, where the Ramah writes that in the case in the Shulchan Aruch that we discussed before, that if Reuven buys a knife in order to use to cut cloth, to cut paper, let's say, and Shimon borrows it, so he doesn't have to dip it. And then the Issa v'Heter himself said that he does have to dip it. But then the Ramah quotes from the Issa v'Heter, and this part the Ramah agrees with, that Reuven, who bought that knife to use to cut paper, cannot even occasionally, even by ofen arai, use it to cut food with. So on that, the Pri Chadash disputes and says that we follow rov shimusho. So if the knife is meant to be a non-food knife, the fact that you occasionally use it for food is not going to transform its identity. One could suggest that this depends on the chakira we mentioned earlier. what is the nature of the chiyuv of tefillas kelim? The model we use, based on what I quoted from Rabbi Willig, is it like tzitzis or is it like tefillin? Is it a, once you define something as a kli suda, you're obligated to dip it. But if it's not a kli suda, you're not obligated to dip it. That would be the model we call tefillin. Or is it like tzitzis, that when you're using it for food, you're obligated to dip it? So the Pri Chadash might be going with the first model. You have to define whether it's a kli suda or not. It's not a kli suda if you just occasionally use it to cut food with, if it's primarily designated for paper. And the Yisuf Heter very well might be going with the second model, that you're not allowed to use it for food without dipping it. So it doesn't matter whether that's once or many times. But again, bottom line, the Pri Chadash is arguing on that Rama, and the Poskim have a debate as to whether we should paskin like the Pri Chadash or the Rama in this regard. Certainly, if you would dip it, it would only be without a bracha. The Sefer Tefillas Kelim wants to suggest that even the Yisuf Heter would agree that if you have something that's totally not designated to be a kli suda, like a screwdriver or a saw, and then you want to occasionally use that to cut food with, let's say you have regular scissors and you have chicken shears, but the chicken shears are not available or you don't have them, and you want to use the regular scissors to occasionally cut a chicken. So the simple reading would be that the Pri Chadash would allow that, and the Yisuf Heter would not. But one could suggest that maybe even the Yisuf Heter would, because that cannot be characterized at all as a kli suda. This, actually, somewhat tangentially, but there is a common mistake that people make, that you're allowed to use a pot or a spoon without dipping it once. And that's just not true. The Heter, which is based on the Pri Chadash, is if you have something that's not a kli suda, either because it's just not, like a screwdriver or a saw, or because you designated a knife as a paper knife, even though it could have been used as a kli suda, but you are not using it as a kli suda, that's where he allows you to use it occasionally. But to use an actual pot or an actual pan or an actual fork, that definitely is a kli suda, and that's your intention to use it. So using it once before the mikvah is certainly prohibited, according to all opinions.
So this Pri Chadash is going to be also relevant when we get to the next major topic, which is being possibly only chayiv in tefillas kelim when the food is used for, when the kli is used for food in its final stages of preparation, ready to be consumed. A related topic concerning touching the food is something that Rabbi Zimmerman briefly alluded to, which is the nutcracker. And this is a live machlokas achronim with several Gedol Yisrael on one side and several on the other side as to whether or not a nutcracker which touches the shell of the nut is called touching the food. So la'alacha, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman held that you dip it with a bracha, and both the Shevet Alevi, as referenced by the Chalkas Binyamin, as well as Moshe Feinstein, hold the dip without a bracha, and that's the way the Chalkas Binyamin is machriya, and presumably by default that's what one should do, to dip without a bracha. An interesting question arises concerning aluminum. So many poskim are quoted, first from by the Sefer Tefillas Kelim, from Shlomo Zalman, and I think they also quote the name of Rabbi Yashiv, that a hefsek niyar, just a piece of paper that's dividing between the food and the dish, is not really going to be halachically meaningful and will not exempt the food from, will not exempt the kli from tevila, even though it's not officially touching the dish. And there are two reasons that are given. One is that it's not the normal use, so you can't artificially just create a divider. And number two, that the paper is tafel and botel to the kli, and therefore the kli is considered the main item that is serving the food, and therefore it's still a kli suda and is chayiv. So on page 4, quoted the Sefer Tefillas Kelim in source 22, who writes that, and the Chalkas Binyamin in source 23 in his Beurim has an analysis of aluminum foil that's used, let's say, on an oven rack, that the reason that we limit Tefillas Kelim to kli suda, as the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, kli suda morim parsha, is that those are the only things that have to be kashered. And since the parsha is clearly talking about kashering, so when it adds the chiyuv of a tevila to the word v'toher, ach b'mei nida yischata, so it's also talking about kli suda. So based on this, the Vilna Gaon, in explaining the ruling of the smak, that one does not have to immerse kelim that do not touch the food because they're not called kli
Klei Suda, quotes the Svara of the Rashba, that since the whole way we know that we're dealing with Klei Suda is because the Torah is requiring kashering. Well, a well-known halacha in Hilchas Kashrus and Bliya is that ain kli bolei kli bli rotev, that one vessel does not absorb from the other one without the liquid in between. And if you have a pot on top of a metal surface, so that metal surface remains unaffected and therefore doesn't require kashering. And that's why, as you shall learn in Hilchas Hagola Hechsher, etc., that a stovetop grate, if we wouldn't be worried about spillover, wouldn't require kashering at all, not for Pesach and not for the rest of the year. The only reason we do require it, at least for Pesach, debate whether we require it the rest of the year for kashrus mix-ups or tray for grates and so on and so forth. There's a debate about that, but because of the spillover. But the pot on the grate itself does not cause bliya from the pot into the grate. It says the Grah, okay, so you see from here that it's not a klei suda, because that's not, you wouldn't need kashering in that case. So the question is, how far do you take that grah? Getting back to the aluminum foil question, if I put aluminum foil on an oven rack, and then straight on that I put pizza, very commonly done in a toaster oven. So if that's the way I always use my toaster oven, can I say that as a result of that, the rack's an al-chayiv and tefillah? So indeed, I had heard, I believe, if I recall correctly, from Rabbi Zwillig and Neuberger, that indeed is the case, that if you only use your racks with foil, so then that's not called the Kli Suda in light of the Shulchan Aruch, similar to the grate of the stove, the Chatzuva, or the tripodish. However, the Chalukos Binyamin summarily rejects that. He uses it even as a reductio ad absurdum argument, that for sure we're not going to say that foil serves as a halachic block and makes it not into a Kli Suda. And then he opines that the fact that there's not blia is not enough to exempt it from tvila. In order to exempt it from tvila, you have to maintain that the kli is not really being mishamesh the food. And you certainly wouldn't say that the rack is not serving the pizza, because the foil itself would not hold up the pizza. So I'm just noting that what the Chalukos Binyamin takes for granted, that foil is not an exemption, even if it's normal, other rabbonim apparently do not. So that needs a psak. And I guess to play it safe, certainly one should dip the rex, either without a bracha, according to this machlokus, unless you have a psak otherwise, or just to make sure it's used directly with food, more than occasionally. I say more than occasionally because then it gets involved in the pre-chodesh question of whether you follow Rav Shimush. This is very relevant, of course, to a microwave plate. The microwave plate is usually made out of glass, sometimes out of plastic, so then the minig is usually generally not to dip plastic, but if it's made out of glass, so for the most part, we don't really put food directly on there, usually on plates. So if you always use it on plates, then it's maybe potter according to all. If you occasionally put things in a paper bag or in a saran wrap, so that very well might be dependent on this machlokis, whether a minor division of paper, plastic, etc. serves as a division and it exempts it from tvila or not. And presumably there also it's proper to dip it without a bracha with another clue. Just to summarize this idea of kelim that are not touching, so in source 24, I quoted in the Kosher Kitchen a cross-section of kelim that are going to be potter from tevila, even if they're made out of glass or metal, because of the fact that they don't touch the food. So I quote a butter dish cover, a cake tray cover, can opener, which is actually mentioned by the Shach, even though the Maril seems to require tevila on that, at least without a bracha. Perhaps he's talking about something that you drill into a barrel with, I believe, and a spout. Maybe he's being mechayev it because it sometimes could touch the wine, but presumably the shach is being mekel because it's only incidental. So the same would be true for a can opener, and that seems to be a more common custom. A corkscrew, oven racks, as we mentioned before, but that would depend on if you do use it with food directly, so then they would require tevila, and if you use it with foil, it would be subject to the debate we mentioned earlier. Refrigerator shelves. So the minhag olam is certainly not to be tovel refrigerator shelves, even though they are often made out of glass. The svara for exempting is because you don't put food directly on, but the issue is that sometimes you do, at least with fruit and things like that. So if it's an orange, so that might depend on the nutcracker shaila, whether the shell, in this case the peel, is considered the food itself. But you also sometimes might put an apple on the refrigerator shelf. The impression I got from the svarim is that at least with respect to refrigerator shelf, which, as we'll touch upon a little later too, I think Rav Zimman also alluded to it, klei uchsun, storage utensils. So the refrigerator starting off is only a suffix chiyuv, because It's not brought to the table, the refrigerator. It's a storage utensil. So that itself is debated. That's one suffix. And then with the Pri Chadash, where the majority use is in pots, it's only occasionally that you use directly on. That's another suffix. And that presumably justifies the Minhag HaOlam not to be Tovel refrigerator Rex, although it wouldn't shock me if I went to a Kela Mikra and saw someone doing that. Okay, the kosher kitchen list continues. The stove grates, the tea bag canister. Here the tea bags are typically in bags, and as Shlomo Zalman points out, when it's normal to use it with a significant divider, so then it would be a sufficient divider and exempt it from Tzvilas Kalim. Again, somewhat Tzarchian, why would be Mekel there, and not necessarily with the case of the aluminum foil, unless the bag of the tea is more significant than just a piece of paper. Okay, the next major topic in terms of Kalim that are not necessarily considered Klei Suda is in section Bet over here on page 5, where it's not used in the final stages. So this actually is a Machlokis, and it begins with the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Hei about the Sakin Shel Shchita, which I think the discussion began with Rabbi Zimmerman. I don't recall exactly how much he discussed, so I'm going to try to elaborate on that quite a bit. So the Mordechai, as well as this Veheter, right, that a Shchita knife, or a knife that's used to flay the skin off of off meat in the original initial processing in the slaughterhouse is not chayiv. And there are those who say that it is chayiv. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Mordechai, that's Potter, and the Ramah quotes the other opinion, which is quoted in the name of the Tashbates. Again, there are two Tashbates. One is the Tashbates HaSvardi, Rav Shemet Ben Semach, who wrote many volumes of Chuvis, and one is the Tashbates called Tashbates HaKotan, Tashbates Ashkenazi, who was a Talmud of the Meram Rutenberg, and he has a lot of psakim from his Rebbe on the Abu Chelke Shulchan Aruch, of course, before the Shulchan Aruch was written. Oftentimes quoted the Halacha, so if you're trying to check that up, you always got to make sure which Tashbates it is. Okay, so the Tashbates holds Chayiv. So the Ramah is Machriya, Tov LeTov Lo B'lo Brocha, that it's good to dip without a Brocha. Sounds like in the language of Tov, that Maker Adin is Pot, there, but it's a good idea to dip it, but certainly without a bracha. I believe the Tashbates himself holds you have to dip it with a bracha. So the Ramah then mysteriously continues to state that metal that you use to do something with matzah, one pshat is the ones you use to make holes with it, others interpret it somewhat differently, you don't have to dip. And the source for that is the Yisuv Heter. So the problem that the Achronim deal with is the Yisuv Heter presumably is Lashitaso, because he holds, like the Mordechai, that you don't have to dip a sack in Shel Shchita. Again, simply speaking, because not used for the final stages. So the things that are being used for the matzah are also used for the raw dough, not in the final stages, so it's Pater. But the Tashbates was Machmir that you have to dip the sack in Shel Shchita. So presumably he should hold that you have to dip the matzah hole punchers as well. So this is a machlokus between the Shach and the Taz, and it's a machlokus la'alacha who we should paskin like. And this is very, very relevant. Simple understanding, the way the Achronim present this debate, I say the simple understanding because there are other ways to understand it, is that a Kli Suda, according to the Makel view that says that you don't have to dip the Sakin Shel Shchita, is defined as something that's used in the final stages where either it's being used with fully edible food or it's being used to bring the food to the state of being fully edible, such as a pot. And the Machmer view holds that no, you don't need edibility. Its sole criterion is being used with food in some stage of its processing. So a Sakin Shel Shchita is being used for the food in some stage of its processing to bring the food to a state where you now can cook it, etc., in a kosher way. So if that's the case, then the question becomes, we are machmir bottom line in light of the Ramah to dip these things without a bracha. So what are these things? So the simple pshat would be like the Taz, which we quote here in source 27, which is that all kinds of utensils that are used in any kind of stage of the food preparation are chayiv to dip without a bracha. So that would include the matzah hole punchers as well, and a whole bunch of other nafkaminas for this, as we'll discuss later, so in summarizing various kalim that this is relevant to. And the Ramah, who didn't say to dip without a bracha there, was samech on the psak that he gave concerning the shechita knife, even though it's somewhat mysterious why he interrupted the tov l'tov l'blo bracha between the sakin shel shechita and the barzelim. So according to that model, all kalim that are used for foods in any stage of preparation are chayiv to dip without a bracha, and when they're used in the final stage of preparation, they're chayiv with a bracha. The Shach, though, maintains that the Ramah was written very precisely here, and that even though the source for the matzah whole panchakula is the oruch, but that the Ramah was machriya, that in that kind of case, all would agree, even the tashbase, that you don't have to dip. And the svar the Shach gives is that there's a difference between a kli that theoretically is perfectly fit to be used for foods in their final stages, such as a shechita knife, because that also could be used theoretically to cut a steak or bread, even though it generally wouldn't be because of its expense, etc., but it's fit for that. And matzah hole punchers, which are not really fit to be used for food in their final stage. According to that shach, and this has many nafkaminas, all kalim that are only used for food in their intermediate stage and are not really fit to be used for food, at least regularly, you could always stretch the limits, it's not designed in a way that's easy to use for food in their final stages, so those would be totally putter. That's what we learned from the matzah hole punches. So this is a machlokas achronim as to how to paskin. The prichorash is note to paskin like the shach, but nonetheless, I think paskin's la halacha that one should dip it without a brocha. In light of the vision of the Taz, and some Gedolei Achronim, I think namely the Chochmas Sadam, paskin straight like the Shach, and some Gedolei Achronim paskin straight like the Taz. So the nafkamina here is whether to dip it or whether to dip it without a bracha. No one's going to say that with a bracha la'alacha, because the main day here is like the Mordechai that a sack in Shashchita doesn't have to be dipped. Now, one could have made a case, and I believe this is what the Aruch HaShulchan says. I did not get a chance to review it, and I wanted to get this shiur on the road, so think Rabbi Zimman referenced this Aruch HaShulchan. That one could have suggested that we shouldn't really understand this debate in such a global way between the Mordechai and the Tashbates. That maybe the Mordechai is only exempting a sack in Shashchita because that's not really called a Kli Suda, because that's the Kli with which you kill the animal. That's not considered part of the food preparation. Even though it's matir you to go to the next step, but that's not like cutting the meat or some other intermediate stage, or let's say a patich, when I'm talking about this, that let's say only used to cook something to machal ben drusoy and not fully. But classic clay suda, a knife that's used to cut, let's say, raw meat, or pats that are used even to cook food not to the total stage, or let's say give another nafkamina, let's say a mixer that's only used with raw dough. So these are classic clay suda, part of food preparation. Just add the Tosefes Nofach Mishali in terms of the Kalim of Clay Midjan. So what? There was you have to kasher pots that are used in intermediate stages also. So, and that's what the Torah Pizumi is also talking about. So to limit it only to the final stages, because that's only that's the only thing that's called Clay Suda, but the Torah doesn't say the words Clay Suda. The Torah says that all those kalim that are used with food, as you mentioned earlier, because those are the things you kasher, so those are the things that you use with food, have to be dipped. So you could make such a solid case that maybe we're overstepping the boundaries of this machlokis, and that we shouldn't have, according to the Taz, this global idea of dipping intermediate food preparation kalim without a bracha, and according to the Shach, some of them not even dipping at all. Maybe we should limit it to things along the lines of sakin shel shechita. And in terms of the barzelim of matzah, as we're going to elaborate later, maybe that's only because that only does something very minor to the food and it's not really so significant. Nonetheless, the Derech HaMelech in the Poskim, as they present this debate to us, and in the Sfarim that we've been quoting all along, whether it be the Sefer Tfilas Kalim and or the Chelkas Binyamin and the Tfilas Kalim Kilchasa and the Gedolei Poskim Shel Zmanenu and of the Dora Kodim that deal with this, of the Dorot HaKodmim that deal with this, they seem to present it in the way we originally presented it, namely that all kalim that are used for intermediate stage processing, even though it's a very significant stage, are subject to this debate and further subject to the sub-debate between the Shach and the Taz. Based on this, the Pischei Tshuva in source 28 quotes a psak from the Chochmas Adam concerning large pots that are used in intermediate stage of cooking some kind of alcoholic beverage, some shechar, so they should need tefillah. But this you learned from Rav Zimmerman concerning the Shev Yaakov. Maybe the fact they're attached to the ground makes the pots putter because maybe they're not makabel tumah. Chochmas Adam does not go that route. He suggests to make a hole in it and repair it with a Jew. But he's mitzadid lekula because it's not fit to drink by the time they process sit and it has to be strained. So in light of the psak of the Mordechai, that those things don't have to be dipped, same with the sack and shoshchita, so there's room to say that it doesn't need to be dipped, but he leaves it as a tzorach iyun, because bottom line, we paskin that you need tefillah without a bracha, and even according to the shach, who holds that not all those kalim require tefillah without a bracha, but the ones that are fit for foods that are roy to be eaten, are chayiv in tefillah without a bracha, and this pot theoretically could have been used for a food smoothly that is in the final state. Okay, so to summarize this section in source 29, so I quoted from the Kosher Kitchen, that a tefillah without a bracha for the following kalim, a pasta machine, which is only used for raw noodles, again, maybe the Aruch HaShulchan might disagree with that, a cookie gun, I don't know what that is, but I guess it's like a device similar to use for caulking to squeeze cookies out onto a pan, again, raw dough, a coffee mill, which is only used for coffee, which you don't eat directly, you have to then cook it with water, a meat tenderizer, a sewing needle for meat, which is mentioned already by the earlier poskim, again, all in the raw stage, a meat grinder, and a kneading hook, again, mostly dealing with dough or raw chicken and not used for other things. Again, one could reanalyze that list in light of the Taz and the Shach. According to the Shach, presumably a pasta machine would not be chayiv in tefillah if it's not fit for any other use. Same with a cookie gun, a coffee mill, perhaps could be used for spices, which are then totally edible. So maybe that would be chayiv even according to the Shach without a bracha, and so on and so forth concerning the other ones. So halacha lemaisa, it seems very common that people dip all these things without a bracha. And again, we mentioned it earlier, just to sharpen it a bit, the Chalkas Ben Yamin writes that Peshas Hadchak, so one perhaps could rely on the Shach. Okay, I'm just adding metal cookie cutters to the list, also used in the stage of the raw dough, and probably not fit for anything else either. That's going to be created with your challah. So according to the Shach, it'll be totally potter. According to the Taz, without a bracha, most cookie cutters think they sell now are made out of plastic. So assuming you're potter in plastic, which is a minigolem, it'll be totally potter. Okay, I mentioned briefly that the Beurim in the Chalkas Binyamin, I quoted here in Source 31. So in that Shev Yaakov, in the elaborate tshuva, he writes, where he develops this idea of Kalim that are not Makabel Tum as being potter, but another sniff he develops, similar to the Chochmas Adam's idea, is that if the person subjectively uses a particular pat that he bought from the store, let's say, or an industry, for things only to bring it to Machel Ben Drusoi at some kind of intermediate stage, but others who would buy that same pot would use it for foods that are totally edible. So that also would fall under the framework of the debate between the opinions and the quoted by the Machab and the Ramah. So the Beurim of the Chalkas Ben Yamin just notes that that's an extra chiddush, which doesn't necessarily follow. One could say that it's maybe goes by the Derech HaOlam of whether it's used for food in the final stages and not necessarily you. Okay, one could analyze at length and might depend on what the nature of tefillah's kalim is, like tzitzis or like tefillin, and so on and so forth, what we mentioned before. As an addendum to this discussion of kalim that are only used for foods that are not edible, we re-raise the issue of the pre-chodesh. This is not something that I saw prominently discussed in the poskim, although I did see some reference in some footnote in one of these as far as we're using that raised this topic, and that is, should we re-raise the issue of the pre-chodesh of majority use when it comes to this issue of things that are not used in the final stages? So just to frame where this becomes a halach lemaisa, there is a pischei tshuva, I didn't quote it in the sources, that discusses that a grinder that's used, let's say, for spices that are not edible as they are, but have to be put into other foods, and are only eaten in conjunction with those foods, so the grinder will be chayiv because it's also used to grind bread. So one could be mefakbek on that psak, at least to be tovel with a bracha, because maybe it's only used for bread occasionally and used for spices mostly. Another relevant situation of that would be, let's say, a mixer. So a mixer is primarily used for inedible foods such as dough, batter, etc. But it's sometimes used, let's say, to whip up cream, which is edible as it is, and put on the cake. So if it's primarily used most of the time for batter and only secondarily used for the minority for the cream, so maybe we should say that, even though it is used for foods in the final stage, but maybe should be subject to at least the machlokis of the pre-chodesh with the others about whether you follow Rav Shimush and you should only dip without a bracha. I believe that I had a conversation with Zvi Cohen. I was able to speak to him twice in my life by phone. And I think he said that indeed, that we should apply that pre-Chodesh. And therefore, only if a 50-50 or
a majority use
for fully edible foods is the case, would we dip such utensils with a bracha? There is another theme in section Gimel here on page 5 of the sheet, starting with source 32, that comes up here and there in the poskim. I don't have it fully spelled out, and it's hard to apply to know where yes, where no. And that is another angle for leniency to say that something is not called a clay suda, is where the way it's used is not a crucial need. It's not such an important need for the food. So we mentioned briefly that Pri Chadash, I have it in source 34 on page 6, that in his view, the Barzalim are Potter Lagamri, at least one svar to say why they're Potter Lagamri, even if you hold the things used in the intermediate stage are Chayev, at least Chayev Labracha, because as we mentioned, it's not really such a crucial use to make holes in the matzah. So this theme of things being used with food, maybe even in the final stages, but not in such an important way, is mentioned by other poskim as well. So, for example, we have a famous Chuvah d'Igros Moshe quoted in source 32. Among various utensils that are electric, and of course, always a risk factor of their breaking, and the whole discussion about how you deal with that. So, Moshe and Yerodeh Chelek Yimel Simuch of Dalit is makel for a toaster. I'm not talking about a toaster oven now, but a regular toaster. Because the only thing you do with a toaster is take bread that's already edible, and then you pop the button down, and then it pops up, and it's toasted. So, Moshe basically says, it's like an interesting musser about, luxuries. He says, you don't really need that. Like, you could eat the bread totally as it is. And the toaster just gives it a little extra flavor. So that's not really called a significant use. And therefore, it's not called a clay suda, and therefore totally potter. So, of course, if Moshe was angling toward leniency because of the fact that the toaster might break when you dip it, and, had it been a different kli, maybe he wouldn't have been somach on that svar alone. But he does say that svar. And the Sefer Tefillos Kelim, by contrast, he quotes Poskim will say that a toaster is chayav to be dipped with a bracha. So hard to know, are they disagreeing with the fundamental lach principle? That's something that is not an important addition to the food flavor or processing is still chayav, or are they arguing on the metzias here that that is important because people like toast? Is a tantalizingly similar psak in source 33, but I just wanted to share with you why, on second thought, I think this is really not relevant. Rav Moshe dealt with a utensil that's not so common anymore, but it used to be more common where people, if they wanted a quick cup of hot water, let's say in a hotel that didn't have facilities for that, it's a motel rather. So it was variously called an electric spoon or just a water heater, immersion heater. Basically, it looked like just an aluminum stick with a wrapped on itself with a circle, kind of looking like a curler or something. And after you put it into water, you would plug it into the wall and it would quickly heat up the water. So there's an interesting discussion about that in terms of whether that bishul is a bishul minatora, bishul derabanan. That was a famous give and take between Shlomo Zalman and Chazon Ish. And it turns into Tefillos Kelim, they have to dip that. So the Ole Yeshurin, Paskins from Moshe Feinstein, an oral ruling that it's totally potter. And the line is, again in source 33, Mishim She'ein Zeh Kli Suda, the E.F. Shalashtamish Bo Rak Lechame Mayim. This is not a Kli Suda, because all you could do is heat up water with it. So it's a very cryptic line. What does that mean, all you could do is heat up water with it? But heating up water does make a clay suda. There's even an explicit discussion about that in the toaster tshuva, where Reb Moshe is mechadesh that the reason why in the list of things that Achayiv and Tefillah and the Gemara of Avodah Zarah included specifically, not just pats, but it also mentioned kumkumusin, u'machame chamin. So he asked the question, why do you have to add that in? That's just like another form of pat. It says, you might have thought that heating water is not really such an important use because you could drink it cold. So Kamash Malan that no, that's a very important use because hot water is used in various cooking settings, etc. Make tea, coffee, and you can't do it in cold water. So Moshe clearly holds that heating of water is called an important use. So what does he mean? Ein zeh kli suda, the efshar lishtamish barak lechamei mayim, when he's talking about this coil immersion heater. So when I first saw this years ago, I thought, okay, this is Moshe l'shitaso, who holds that things that are not important are not chayev in tefillos kelim. But that can't be, because otherwise it's miastira between what he writes here and in the tshuva itself, and ultimately b'feirush Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that pots that heat water even if exclusively for water, are chayiv and tefilas kelim. I think what he means is a svara that I think might be quoted by Reb Shlomo Zalman. I have to review where I saw that it's not called a kli, it's called a fire. And even though it's a fire that heats the water by putting it into the water, but that doesn't change the fact that it's a fire. So if so, that's not really relevant to our discussion here about things that I use in a non-crucial way, but some other principle that a metal kli that's not being used as a kli suda, but as a substitute fire, is not chayiv. Nonetheless, I think you do find in the Sefer Tefilas Kelim that such a utensil should be dit. Even with a bracha that you find in Perek Yud Aleph, a very useful perek in the Sefer Tefilas Kelim, where he goes through all the materials and all the kelim by alphabet and telling you what the din is about them. Section Dalet on page 6 quoted some sources concerning storage utensils. Rabbi Kiva Eger, to some extent, is the Rosh HaMedabrim, at least on the page of Shulchan Aruch, where he quotes various achronim quoted by the Knesset HaGedolah as to whether or not storage utensils are chayiv or not. On the one hand, they're used with food. On the other hand, they're not really taken to the table in the context of eating, and they're not really used for food preparation, so maybe they're potter. One would have understood perhaps a pshara view to be machmir without a bracha for metal, which is deraisa according to most poskim, and be makel for glass. But the bottom line psak, as I presented in source 36, by sample from the Sefer Tefilas Kelim, that we would dip all of those kelim, whether metal or glass, with a cookie jar and things like that, without a bracha. But if it actually is taken to the table, based on the pre-chorash, not just occasionally, but very regularly, so then that would be chayiv even with a bracha. We mentioned before that concerning the refrigerator racks, and this also comes up in other situations, we'll come to that later in terms of bottles that are used to store food when being sold, the bottles that are, or metal cans that are used to contain the food when they're being sold. So one of the snifim lahakel in a lot of these situations is the fact that storage utensils are not a clear-cut chiyuv of tefillah. Okay, the next major topic on page 7, which is in section Hay, deals with, broadly speaking, three subtopics, but they all have a certain common denominator in terms of what they're rooted in. Klei Schayra, which by that I mean utensils that are bought by someone from a non-Jewish manufacturer, not in order to use, but in order to sell to others, to use for food. A related topic is what we briefly mentioned earlier, is the utensil that has the food inside of it when it's being sold, the grape juice bottle or the tuna fish can. And the third, which Rabbi Zimman spoke about as well, which is to what extent can this perhaps be included to a utensil that you're giving to someone else as a gift? That maybe till the final user receives it, maybe it's something along the lines of Kli Schora, because the gift giver is not using it to eat out of. So starting with Kli Schora itself, again, meaning a situation where someone buys utensils from a non-Jew in order to sell to someone else, so there's no clear-cut source of that I'm aware of in the Rishon. The first one to raise this issue is the Beis Yosef. To recall, there was a Yesh Omrim quoted by the Shulchan Aruch. He didn't quote anyone who argues, although the Shach and the Taz quote someone who argues, that if Reuven bought a utensil from a non-Jew to cut cloth with, and Shimon borrows it, then Shimon is potter, because it's lo neschayev yad harishon. Again, to recall briefly, this v'heter is quoted by the Taz and the Shach, that you are chayev, Shimon is chayev to dip it. So l'halacha, they recommend to dip that without a bracha. Okay, so the Beis Yosef himself said, and we mentioned this in our analysis of kelim that are used in restaurants or catering halls, that the same analysis should apply to a storekeeper. That if a storekeeper, a Jewish storekeeper, buys non-Jewish kelim to sell, so it's also a case of lo neschayev yad harishon, and would also be subject to that debate between the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch and the Yesh Omrim and the Isveter. That if that storekeeper would not sell it to someone else, because then the Beis Yosef says it is chayiv, even though he has a havamina, that even there may be Shimon's potter. Very shocking havamina. But at least if Shimon, the second fellow, borrowed it from the storekeeper, so then it's it would actually be potter, or as we mentioned, subject to that debate. And the Chochmas Sadam is machriya, that we have a right to rely on that for glass, but not for metal. Okay, so this extension of the Beis Yosef is quoted lahalacha by the Taz here in source 37. Sivkat Niud. So many of the Gedolei Poskim, even though it's not so common to have the original Nafkamina that they're discussing, which is to have Reuven, the one who bought it to sell, lend it out to Shimon. But a question that becomes relevant, that was highlighted to me by the store owner of Town Variety on Main Street in Kew Garden Hills, that when one is buying a utensil, and sometimes Jewish houseware stores have a mikveh on the premises, so when could that kli be dipped? So I remember the store owner told me that even though I totally trust you that you'll pay for the kli, but you can't dip it till you pay for it, because till you pay for it, it's my kli. And for me, it's a kli schora, and therefore it's not chayiv and tefillah. So once you buy it, and then you buy it for yourself, and you're going to use it for food, so even before you use it for food, so then it's chayiv, and then you can dip. So it's a somewhat of a vague memory, because mamish from more than 20 years ago, but I do believe hearing from one of my rebbeim, I think it was Rabbi Schechter, that that's a big chiddush, to say that a storekeeper can't even dip it when he knows it's going to be sold to someone else. But many Gedolei Poskim, among them Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, is quoted by the Sefer Tefillos Kelim that it cannot be dipped by the storekeeper or the one who wishes to buy it before he actually buys it, because it's not chayiv yet. And we didn't have to dip it again afterward, maybe without a bracha, because the issue of kli schora not being chayiv is somewhat of a chiddush. The Sefer Orli Yeshurin in footnote 212 on page 64, I didn't quote it on the Mar Makoimus, says that it's enough for the buyer to have Gemira's Das to buy it. Then it's already called the Klisuda, and it requires Tvila. But Rav Moshe himself seems to agree that the storekeeper can't pre-dip all of his utensils as a service to his customers so that they don't have to dip it. So they take this idea very seriously, the Poskei's Manein. Okay, so we'll see later that is going to be a further discussion in terms of kelim being given as a gift. Can one pre-dip that, or is that too early? Because for the gift giver, it's not called a kli suda. Maybe actually it's discussed that now, even though I listed that in section Roman numeral small III 3, before we discuss glasses that are being used to store things being sold. So if we turn now to page 8 in source 42, kli shenosim v'matana. So the Rosh HaMedavrim on this seems to be the Sheos HaChuvas van Hoggis from Rav Sternbuch Shlita, first volume, Simon Tofnun Beis, that you're giving a cup and matana to somebody, a glass or metal, can you dip it beforehand? And the Shaila is not just a convenient Shaila, it's also, let's say, giving it to someone religious who you know is not going to dip and you're trying to be mezakin. A similar topic is taken up by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the letter that he wrote to the author of the Tefillos Kelim, Ritzvi Cohen. I guess maybe Rav Shlomo Zalman is the Rosh HaMedavrim because they think that letter was written before the Chuvas van Hoggis. So he goes back and forth and says, because of the fact that maybe for the gift giver it's not called the Kli Suda. On the other hand, he writes at the very end, Yesh Litzade, Degama Shekona Meikora Avur Chavero, Lashimish Chavero, Lesuda Choshev Nami. Maybe it's better than the case of the storekeeper, because you're buying it for someone specifically to use for the meal, even though it didn't become his yet. It's Arch Beir. So he seems to leave it as a doubt, and in order to solve the quandary, he suggests, especially if you're dealing with an irreligious person who might not dip it altogether, so he says you should do a zachon lanam shelo b'fanav, and you should, I guess, either when you buy it in the store, have him in mind, so you're picking it up for him, or if you bought it without that intention, keeping your finger on the chest piece, you might not give it to him, so then you give it to someone outside, preferably outside the family, because be mezakeh with someone inside the family is a shaila in Hilchos Erev, whether that works or not, and this way you formally make it his. Oh, now it's his, and he's going to use it for Suda. And now you could be mezakeh him with the Tvila, as we pointed out earlier, that you're in the previous year, that you're allowed to dip someone's kelim without their permission and even make a bracha. Quite a chiddush. Indeed, in the Sefer Tvilas Kelim Kolchasa of Rabbi Phillips, in source 43, he has a very rich discussion about this, concerning a very common shaila, and shalach manis that people want to give, candies or whatever and the like, and they want to put it on a fancy glass tray, which is also part of the gift. So can you dip that? So here he quotes from very significant poskim, namely Rav Eliashiv and Rav Nevensal, that you and Rav Azriel Auerbach, Rav Shlomo Zalman's son, Rav Chaim Greenblatt, Lahav Mechaim Lachaim, one of the Gedolei Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who published many, many volumes of Chuvas, that you cannot dip it. Because it's not chal, because for you it's not a clay suda, so it's similar to clay schora, and that if you would dip it, the other person would have to dip it again. So it's not an eitzah to dip it. And I believe Rabbi Zimmerman quoted, followed up with him on this, I think it's in the Maramakar. Kaimis that Reb David Feinstein was Tameya on such a psak and says, not only is it chal, but if you're putting the candy straight on the dish, you have to dip it and there's no way out. The Sefer Tvil Skelem Chachasa quotes from the Mishnah Lochis and the Mitzion Teitze Torah, not familiar with that, the Tshuva Sefer, Rab Lieberman, who was just recently passed away, who was a big writer on Yonei boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Kufshitz, one of the Gedolei Poskim was Manenu, and he also said he heard this from Rav Tzvi Cohen, that you can dip it. And Rav Tzvi Cohen compared it to a storage utensil. I'm just being ma'orer that if it is a storage utensil, then you should only dip without a bruch. Okay, so this is a big machlokes about giving a shalach manis with a glass or just giving a utensil. Can you dip it? And if you're putting food into it, like for shalach manis, maybe you're chayev to dip it. So obviously the briskers will try to be yotzei all the shitas and I guess dip it without a bracha and then put the food in and inform the recipient that I already dipped it, but you probably should dip it again because my dipping might not be valid. And if you want to really be machmir and give people an opportunity to make a bracha, so either you'll dip it, you know, yourself with another kli and have him dip it without a kli, or you will non-elegantly give the shalach manis in like bags and then put it on the tray and then on the Purim card explain why you did that. Okay. Concerning electric utensils, which Rabbi Zimmerman discussed this somewhat at length, I just wanted to mention another aspect of this in this fairly complex topic about electric utensils. So first of all, on a pragmatic level, there's certainly solid experiential knowledge that if you have a simple electric utensil, it doesn't have electronic chip, that it could survive the tefillah provided you let it dry out for a significant number of days. People say 24 hours, 2 days. I recommend a week or two and use a hair dryer to dry it faster. That usually will do the trick, and this way it could be icy all the sheetis, and simply speaking, you could make a bracha too if it's made out of a utensil that the materials that are chayev, because it is a klisuda. One might be mefakbek, as I'm going to mention in a moment, that there's some poskim say electric utensils are totally potter. So to be choshesh for those days, so maybe she's done without a bracha, again, preferably with another kli. So I just wanted to mention that, again, one of the earliest tshuvas on electric utensils was the Chelkas Yaakov. Chelkas Yaakov was a Yaakov Breish, who was a rav in Switzerland, passed away a number of decades ago, widely quoted, and he has two tshuvas on the topic. Again, Rabbi Zimmerman, I think, quoted this, so forgive me if I'm overlapping. I don't have everything fresh in my mind. The Chelkas Yaakov's first tshuva was about that immersion heater that we discussed from Moshe Feinstein. Again, to recall, Moshe Feinstein was Makel, if our understanding is correct, because it's not really a klisuda, it's a fire. The Chelkas Yaakov was Makel based on a famous analysis, because he goes consistently with the Shev Yaakov, that a kli that is not Makabel Tuma, either because of some size, very large size, sometimes killing like that are not Makabel Tuma, or because it's attached to the ground, is part from Tvila, which was the original case of the Shev Yaakov. So he reasons that utensils that only could be used by plugging them into the wall are considered halachically attached to the ground, and therefore that immersion heater is potter. Now, many poskim disputed that contention that plugging something into the outlet makes it called attached to the ground. If I recall correctly, I think some of them give a parallel in Hilchos Shabbos, and actually there's a discussion about this. But as an example, the Shmiras Shabbos Chos is Mekel, at least for plugs that are oftentimes unplugged, that if the appliance is off, that you're allowed to take the plug out. Again, it can be a muksa issue, so with two elbows, that it could be unplugged and the appliance is off because you're not causing any electric change. Why isn't that a problem of Soser? You're destroying, and one could theoretically entertain the possibility, depending on your definition of grama, that maybe one could plug in a utensil that the Shabbos clock eventually will turn on. Again, that would be much more questionable because of issues of grama. Some are make of grama and yomtif, not even considers this grama. Again, not a topic. Why shouldn't that be called bone? Because you attach to the ground. So generally, you have a klal and elchus bone and soser, that things that are regularly taken out and put in is not considered attached. And that's why, leaving some perhaps other secondary issues, theoretically, one should be able to hang a picture on the wall on Shabbos. It's not bona. It's not nullified. I think we had this chus of teaching bona to the Mizrahi group, and we came up with a, you know, kind of a slogan, Liot Echad. Bona is when you unify. You haven't unified because it's meant to come in and out. So they questioned this ruling of the Chelkas Yaakov, whether you could really consider it attached to the ground, even if you assume things that are attached to the ground are pater from Tfilas Kalim. Chelkas Yaakov is premised on two big assumptions. Number one, that Tfilas Kalim depends on the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, which is debated. And number two, that's considered attached to the ground. It's not a topic for now, but in a later tshuva of the Chelkas Yaakov, so he was someone brought a proof to him from a Teferis Yisrael in Masechta Kelim. It's not our topic for now, but it could be maybe we could divide between the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Tumah. And maybe the laws of Tumah just depend on whether it is physically attached to the ground, even if it's regularly taken out, as long as that is its normal use. And Hilchos Shabbos, the fact that it goes in and out, so then it's not so certain. Okay, but either way, this tshuva was controversial, and many, I think one of them, the Shevet HaLevi, of course, Rav Moshe Feinstein, by default, doesn't entertain that possibility. He's looking for other coolers concerning the immersion heater, concerning the toaster, as well. But the second tshuva of the Chelkis Yaakov, where someone asks him about an electric urn, is very enlightening, because oftentimes the Chelkis Yaakov is misquoted to say that he exempted all electric kelim because of the fact they're considered attached to the ground and they're used attached to the ground. But in the urn tshuva, he writes that it's chayif, and he tries to figure out how with a tayfeach amnasat piach, by wetting your hands, or maybe putting wet cotton, stuffing up the electric contacts, and in this way to be able to dip it without breaking it. Again, he didn't propose dipping it and waiting to dry it, even though other poskim say that that works, and why not do that? So, and he explains that my former tshuva is not relevant here, because it's only if you use it exclusively attached to the ground, that, or at least mostly attached to the ground, in light of the pichodosh, that it will be potter. But if it's used 50-50 or even mostly not attached to the ground, so then it's certainly going to be chayiv. So an urn, yes, is a water heater, but it also could serve as a punch dispenser. And apparently he's assuming that it would be used that way. Then he calls the Pri Chadash about Rov Shimush, so maybe it should still be potter because mostly used attached to the ground, meaning by electric utensils. Then he throws in to be mitzarif like two miot shimushes. One is the punch, and one is that sometimes he could plug it into a generator, which is not attached to the ground, a mobile generator. Okay, one could debate the Metzius and say that in that particular case of an urn, that maybe we should be able to be makel, because maybe that's rare that someone's going to use an urn on a mobile generator, and maybe it's rare that it's used for punch also. But you have to check the Metzius. But in any case of relying on this Chelkis Yaakov for electric appliances, so first, many Gedolei Poskim disagreed very vehemently. And even if you do rely on it, you can only rely on a type of utensil that doesn't really have a reasonable use when it's not attached to the electric. One can make a good case to suggest that it should be chayav b'li bracha, even if you're going to go with the general approach of the Chelkis Yaakov, and even if you're going to assume that you don't use it for punch. But we mentioned earlier from the Shach, concerning the shechita knife, that since it's fit to be used for finished products, so even though it's only used for non-finished products, so maybe it would be, that's the case, it would be chayav libracha. So here an urn is certainly fit to be used for punch. Okay, one could make a distinction between those two cases, but just throwing it out for your analysis. Halacha l'maisa concerning electric, so I think Rav Zimmern mentioned, so we very much try to dip it. And again, if it's a regular electric, this would probably include a George Foreman grill, unless they've updated that to include a chip, a regular urn that doesn't have a chip to it, and other such appliances. But it's becoming more and more complex in terms of appliances having a chip. And I get back to the town variety owner, that's what others point out as well, that that's really going to ruin the kli. And the question is, what should you do? So one aid says to somehow have a Jew unplug the wires or make a hole in it and patch it up. That's somewhat of a complex way to go. Rabbi Tendler wanted to go that way. He said, you buy yourself a soldering iron and you unscrew the things and you pull off the wires, even though you're not breaking the kli, but you're breaking the usability of the kli, and then you re-solder it. Okay, I don't know if I know how to do that. And others would give it to a guy and borrow it. I think the boys were throwing out all these aitzes. Some would be mafkir it. They tell an interesting story about Aaron Lichtenstein's atzal, that he was mafkir his electric appliances in order to avoid the issue. And then when the boys found out about this, it was a Purim joke. So when they were chogeg and the soed at his house, so they took away all the electric appliances because he had mentioned that he made them hefker. So I heard this from Rabbi Newberg. So they came back the next day and gave back all the kelim, and you know, Rebbe was just a joke. I hope it was taken in good fun. So Aaron Lichtenstein, the Isha Halacha, said, no, b'shem panim v'ofen lo, I'm certainly not going to take it back to kelim. But I'm going to make a joke of the whole halachic process. When I was mafkarit. So if I'm going to take it back, that's going to imply that I wasn't serious about the hefker, so I'm not taking it back. So the boys were all crestfallen because they felt that they had, you know, ruined the Purim joke over here and had made the Rebbe lose hundreds of dollars. So I think Rabbi Neuberger pointed out that he slipped it to the Rebbe when the Rebbe wasn't watching. Turn for a moment to Roman numeral II, the lowercase, in page 7, going back to what we had skipped. It is a very, very important shaila, both in terms of factory owners, but also more relevant to us, the consumers. You have utensils that are used to store the food for selling. So is that chayav or not? So at first glance, this should be the shaila of klei ichsun. It's not really being used at least by the seller, to do anything but to store. But that's a machlokes. And lahalacha, we were passing that it's chayiv and tefillah bli bracha. So should we apply that here as well? So I quote in source 38 a very rich discussion of this from the Sefer Tefillos Kelim Kilchosa. The Tefillos Kelim has it as well, but I just found the discussion here richer. So I quoted it from the competing Sefer. And basically, it is a machlokes among the Gedolei HaPoskim, with some being machmir and some being mechel. And just to quote briefly some of the svaras that I mentioned, lakula. So one of them is that it's better than storage utensils. It's kli schora. And kli schora, we saw the Beis Yosef paskind, is pata from tvila, at least by the soicher, even though we pointed out that that's not an absolutely smooth kula, but it would be difficult to impose a chi of tvila on factory owners. So that's one sad lahokel. And that's given by the Reb Shlomo Kluger. And he quotes an interesting svara from a Rubin, the author of the Orcha Shabbos. Interesting, quotes it from a weekly parsha sheet that was published on a shiurim that he would give on a Shabbos. So he says that this is better than clay ichsun or storage utensils. These are just like trucks. They're just trying to get it from place to place. They call it like a gesher ba'alma. So it's not called a kli suda. But he quotes Machmirim. He quotes the Minchas Yitzchak. And in turn, quoting the Mariel Diskin, that he has a suffix about this and one should be Machmir on this. And he quotes from Nissim Karelitz as well. And I'm just mentioning that this is part of a more recent controversy. It touches upon, you know, when you have conflicting halachic values, which should bend. So there's a famous Israeli glass factory. I think it's the only glass factory that manufactures bottles locally. It's called Finish. Those bottles come with a pay with a triangle around it. And so there's a question of where should we push the Jewish Israeli companies who are making food? What kind of bottle should they get? Should they get a bottle from Chutz Loretz, which is from a goy, which gets involved in the Tefillos Kelim question, or should they get the bottle from Finnish, which is an Israeli company, a Jewish company, and lahalacha we paskin, even though it's an irreligious company, would not be chayv in Tefillos Kelim. So even if you're machmir on the industrial bottles here, but on the other hand, the Finnish factory is open on Shabbos, so they almost swung a deal with them to get them to not be open on Shabbos. The thing that was holding them back, besides the fact that unfortunately they didn't care yet about Shabbos, was the fact that if they shut down the factory on Shabbos and stopped the heating, so it's going to take like another day or two to get the factory back up. So they're going to have a whole situation where they can keep the factory going on automatic pilot on Shabbos, even though normally we don't allow that because of Avshe Milsa, but here I think they were going to be Makel, and in the end the deal fell through. So if I believe that one kashrus organization here feels that it's better to go with them, even though they're being Mechal Shabbos, but that's not our problem. They backed out on the deal in order to avoid the Tefillos Kelim Shaila. And others say, what? If they put the Tefillos Kelim Shaila was paskin by many Gedolei HaPoskim Lekula based on some svaras we gave earlier, and an additional svaras we'll see later, an additional svara that is similar to Ma'aseh Sheni, where a barrel becomes secondary to the food. So here also it becomes secondary to the food. So as long as the food is in there for transportation purposes, it's not called the Kli Suda. And certainly we should put Shabbos as a primary. So we should boycott that factory. We should get the bottles from Chutz Loretz. So bottom line is different companies go different ways in this regard. What's more relevant to us as consumers is what do we do when we buy such bottles or cans? So the most extreme shita, of course, would say, okay, so for you, it's going to be a storage utensil or even bring it to the table, so you immediately should open it and dump out the contents. That's not the standard psak, but basically what we have is three mainstream views over here. One view is Chazon Ish, that you don't have to open it right away, but as soon as you open it, you have to dump it out. You certainly can't eat from it, because for you, it's a kli suda. The possible exception, Chazon Ish Shitoso, the tuna fish can. The tuna fish can the Chazon Ish holds is not a kli, because the kli atum. And then when you open it, you're making a kli, right? In terms of really relevant to the Shabbos, in terms of the fact that that's why he prohibits opening cans. So here it turns out to be a kula, because then the Jewish consumer made the kli. But concerning, let's say, a grape juice bottle, etc., so then, simply speaking, you did not make the kli. So that's why he would say that as soon as you open it, you have to dump it out. A middle-of-the-road view is that you don't have to dump it out, but as soon as it's empty, you have to throw it out or dip it for further use. And the most that is the view, I believe, of Shlomo Zalmaybach, and he throws in an extra kula. That let's say when you pour the grape juice out of the wine out of the bottle, and then you have some leftover in the cup, take care of the pgam, pour some wine in first, so in case you're drunk from it, you should be able to pour it back, and you can pour it back in the bottle. Ah, but then you're using the untitled kli. Says that's considered part of the original original storage from the store, and that's not yet considered using it as a kli suda, where you're just emptying it out and emptying it out. And so that's a chiddush, but many people, including myself, maybe wrongly, but we do that all the time. And the most makel view, which is advocated by Moshe Feinstein, is based on a svara that's mentioned by the Maril Diskin, as well as quoted by the Sharam Tzion Bahalofa, Rav Brown, in his commentary on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, as well as the Igros Moshe, which is a very original svara that we mentioned briefly earlier, that let's say in Yerushalayim, you have Maisa Sheni money and you're buying food. Let's say you're buying a barrel of wine, so you're allowed to pay for the barrel too, even though that's not food, because it's Botel Agav Demachal. So here also, as long as the wine is in the bottle, let's say as an example, so the bottle is not really called the Kli Suda yet, because it's tuffle to the food. You, the Jew, who are now going to, after the wine is emptied out, now you want to reuse it, so you're making the Kli, even though it's not as drastic as poking a hole and that makes it unusable and resoldering, but it's still called making the Kli. So the Ramosha says that as a possible Svara, he says you certainly could rely on it for glass, and it's Tzarachin or Efsher, you could rely on it even for metal. So Rav Willig, in his analysis of this, thought Rav Moshe's Psak can be relied on, and Keseder in Morosha Kolel, so the, I don't know if they do it anymore, they certainly would use the grape juice bottles after they were empty for water. And many poskim, that's what the Tefillas Kelim seems to advocate, follow the view that you don't have to dump it out right away, but you cannot use it again until you dip it. Presumably, if you follow that shita, it should only be dipped without a bracha because of the shita of Moshe Feinstein. Another svar that's thrown in here is maybe when you buy these bottles, you don't intend to buy the bottle because you don't want to buy issers, because you don't want to use things without Tefillas Kelim. So you're really only intending to buy the food. That's mentioned by a Chel Chivas Priyasada and the Chelkas Yaakov, quoted on the bottom of page 7, a summary of the various shitas lakula and various svaras lakula. Another additional svar I quoted in source Dalet, moving on to page 8 from Shlomo Zalman Cohen, is that for the most part people are going to throw it out after it's used. Maybe it's a throwaway, and that touches upon throwaways, which is going to be the last topic we're going to deal with at the end of this year. A related question is drinking from the bottle. I heard in the name of Herschel Schechter that he was not happy about someone buying a Snapple bottle and then opening it and drinking it, because that would be called a use. And it's not just the more passive use of just slowly emptying it. Here, using it as a cup. Maybe you could distinguish that. And a soda can, that will depend on whether you consider the soda can to be clear already. So he would insist on only pouring out the Snapple bottle, not necessarily all at once, but slowly into a cup. Others are makel even in that. So if you go through the various reasons why it's mutter, go to Moshe's Maisa Sheni idea, so then if you follow that, that's even mutter too. But if you go with the approach that it's more of a passive kind of use of rikun, of emptying it out, so then it should follow that should not be allowed. So that needs a psak. I think many are lenient to drink from it, but that is dependent on this machlokas. I want to go back for a moment to section 5 and page 9. We discussed various chatzitzos, and both in terms of things that are on the kli, stickers, etc., the miyot ha-makbid, miyot she'ein ha-makbid, rov miyot. We also discussed the maisa tefillah, not to create a chatzitza by holding it as well. Nemanus, I want to discuss one other topic that's mamish very relevant to maisa, and goes as follows. Let's say you have a utensil that is made up of multiple parts. Oftentimes will be taken apart for cleaning. So a lot of the posts can discuss meat grinders, but this is of course relevant to mixers, blenders, where you have parts that are put together, and that's the way it's used. So oftentimes we have situations where the parts that are put together, only some of them actually directly contact the food, and oftentimes only some of them are actually metal or glass. The others oftentimes are plastic. So our journey starts in Shulchan Aruch in source 49 on page 10 under the topic of Tefillas Kelim Shel Prokim, made of different parts. So the Shulchan Aruch writes from the Mordechai, I believe, that you have to dip the hands of the kli, you have to dip the handles of the kli. So the chiddush being, even though it doesn't touch the kli, and as the post can point out, even if it's not made out of metal, made out of wood, let's say, so it's still chayiv to be dipped. So the Chalkas Binyamin quotes from the original source the Beis Yosef is quoting, in source 50, Umali beis tashmisho shel akli, umali yodo. Chol akli tzarech likanes l'kedushas Yisrael b'tvila. What does it matter, the inside of the kli or the handle? That's all kli. And all of that has to enter into kedushas Yisrael. So that's why you have to dip all of it. So chiddush number one is that you can dip it totally, and it's not a chatzitza between the handle and the pot. Chiddush number two is that you have to dip it. Since it's attached, that becomes part of the kli, and you have to dip. So what would be the halacha if you took the handle off and then dipped it, would you then be able to screw the handle back on and use it? So in the Sefer Tevilas Kelim, he says, yes, the handle primarily doesn't really need tevilah. And it only needs tevilah because it's attached to the thing that needs tevilah, and therefore it becomes part of the kli. So if you take the handle off, and then you dip the, let's say, the metal frying pan or whatever, so and then you put the handle back on, you put it. Source 51, I quoted that for you. Chalkas Binyamin, in his Beurin, says that certainly not. Since the handle becomes fused with the kli itself to become part of the kli suda, so even though it's made out of something that's not chayiv in tefillah, but if you dip the utensil and then you reattach the handle, so now you have a different form of kli suda, part of which was not totally dipped. It all becomes one entity that all becomes chayiv in tevila. Similar to the language of the Mordechai, mali beis tashmisho shel kli umali yado. The chala kli tzarech likanes gluch Yisrael betevila. So it's interesting. What the Sefer Tevilas Kelim takes for granted that the handle be'etzim is not really chayiv, but while it's attached, it becomes part of the kli. Chalkas Binyamin takes for granted the other way, that it's going to be chayiv based on the Mordechai. Then I move to the next step. So certainly we should learn from that. Shouldn't take the handle off. Okay, shaila. If you did, you have to dip it again when to put the handle in. If you did that, my advice would be to dip it again without a bracha, in light of that machlokas, even though the Chalkas Binyamin's argument is very convincing. But what about the more common question of things that oftentimes are sold in the box, disassembled, and you assemble them, such as the receptacle part of a blender, where you have the plastic ring on the bottom with the metal blades, which is, of course, what's making you chayiv. Sometimes the receptacle is made out of glass, so that's also an item that's chayiv, but a lot of times plastic. But the metal blades are basically a knife, a blender, a cutter, so they're chayiv min haTorah. So should you dip it disassembled or assembled? So this is a question that was first addressed by the Har Tzvi and in parallel by the Minchas Yitzchak. You have it in Source 52. And this touches upon Mishnayos in Masechta Kelim. I think it's quoted in Masechta Sukkah. You have a bed that's Tameh in the regular rules of Tom Vitara. So do you dip the whole bed all together, or can you dip them parts? So the Mishnah actually says you could dip it either way. So the Har Tzvi says maybe here you cannot do it either way, because maybe here it's Kli Suda, and if it's taken apart, it's not a Kli Suda. So he concludes that it's certainly good to dip it all together, and that would be the preferred way to dip it. And in the end, he concludes that since you don't need an uman, you don't need an artisan to take it apart and put it back together again, so even when it's disassembled, it is still called a kli seuda, and you can dip it that way too. But he insists that if you do that, you have to take it totally apart. Sefer Tevilas Kelim is, and all the screws and so on and so forth. So that would probably be a pain in the neck, so best to dip it all assembled. So the chiddush here is that even though parts of the utensil are not chayev in tefillah, they're plastic, but nonetheless, that whole tzura, just like the handle of a pot doesn't serve as a chatzitza, even if it's made out of plastic, so to here, and that is the preferred way to do it. And one could have even been mefakpek on the psak of the Har Tzvi, as he himself originally starts out with the opposite svara, that maybe you cannot dip it disassembled. So again, it seems like the Gedolei Poskim, both the Minchas Yitzchak and the Har Tzvi, said you could do either one, but if you disassemble it, you have to disassemble it totally. Interesting. The Chalkas Binyamin, although he refers to these tshuvas, he only quotes the first part of them and says you should dip it when it's assembled. I think that might be the Chalkas Binyamin Lishitaso, that he's concerned that all the parts are called Klei Suda, and they're called Klei Suda when they're all attached. But again, certainly clear to Heter to dip it all together, and somewhat more questionable to dip it separate, but Minchas Yitzchak and Har Tzvi say that's also allowed. When you disassemble, what parts do you have to dip? So the Har Tzvi and the Minchas Yitzchak are silent about this. The Sefer Tevilas Kelim says it's pashit that you only have to dip the parts that are chayiv. So if you take apart the blender totally, so you have like usually a rubber ring, and you have a plastic large base screw-like item, and oftentimes the plastic receptacle. So he says you only have to dip the knife, and he writes pashit. I wrote on the notes here in page 10, this is source 53, I'm Yud Chesei, if you go to the Makoros, just humbly mentioning my name here, Yaakov Chaim Haber, my own comments here and there, Lenias Daitian Poshet Klau, I am Chalkas Binyamin. Chalkas Binyamin, recall, had said that if you take the handle off and dip it, then you put the handle back on, you have to dip it again, even though the handle's made out of plastic, because that all becomes part of the clay suda. So he certainly would say that here too, so I don't think it's Poshet at all. He quotes the Darkei Moshe, but the Darkei Moshe, which is quoted by the Gois Maimini, quoted by the Shach, but the Darkei Moshe is talking about a case where you have like some kind of grinder or maybe a mortar, which is made out of metal, and then the bowl on the bottom is wood. So you dip the mortar and you, or the grinder, but not the wood bowl. That's not parallel. The wood is not attached. So even though you don't have to dip the bowl, but Who says you don't have to dip the plastic utensils? So even if you're going to make a, like the Har Tzvi and the Minchas Yitzchak, that it's better to dip it totally together. But if you disassemble, you have to disassemble totally. Maybe you have to dip all those parts. That's what I would say, la'alacha. That, in my humble opinion, it's better to dip it totally attached. But if you're going to rely on the lenient view, they can do it detached. You should dip all the parts.
Rav Yashiv in the Sefer Tvilas Kelim Kelchosa takes the view that we quoted in the name of the Chelkas Binyamin to the next step, and that is as follows. Most poskim maintain that the electric base of a kli that is used to provide the motor or the heating. So, for example, when you have a mixer, so you have the metal beaters that are attached to a hand motor, or it stands alone on the counter. Or you have a blender where the receptacle is placed on top of a motor device, the ones with the various speeds. Or a toaster oven where the rack is inside a box that provides the heat and aids in the cooking in the closed area. So Rav Yashiv maintains that the Kli Suda is defined as all of that, because that's the way it's used and that's the way it's functional. It's kind of the reverse of the Chelkas Yaakov, who says that the fact that it's plugged in is a reason to exempt everything. And Rav Yashiv says the fact that it's plugged in and there's a motor is a reason to be mechayev everything. When I first found out about this view, I found it very surprising, but logically we could understand this view as an extension of this idea of how do we define the Kli Suda. So Rav Tzvi Cohen is defining the Kli Suda ultimately as only the metal or the glass parts that are used in preparing the food, even though you can dip them all together, but if you separate them all out, all you have to do is dip the parts of the materials that are chayiv. The Chelkas Binyamin is assuming that the Kli Suda is all of the parts that are engaging the food, and Rav Yashiv takes it to the next step, that it's all the parts that are, broadly speaking, involved in processing the food, including the motors that, or the heating devices that are involved in that particular utensil. I didn't get a chance to research as to how many allies Rav Yashiv has in his Shita. I do believe that that's not the consensus approach, but that is an approach that is taken. And of course, that broadens the perspective on the problematic nature of being Tovel Electric Kalim and how to navigate that particular issue, as we mentioned and Rav Zimmerman presented in his shir.
Last topic I want to discuss in section 7, Roman numeral capital letters, VII, in page 12, is one-time utensils, throwaways. A very, very common situation in our lifestyle of living. Wasn't so common, you know, hundreds of years ago. People that didn't really throw things out that quickly. So I want to just mention various opinions here. It's majority of the poskim seem to hold that this is not a problem for various reasons we're going to spell out. The Sefer Tvilas Kelim, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't even quote anyone who argues on this. But the Sefer Tvilas Kelim Kilchasa for Rabbi Phillips quotes a significant amount of poskim who do disagree. So I just wanted to spell out the issues as follows. The most common example of this is the throwaway aluminum pans. It is also relevant, at least if you're not reusing it, to the storage utensils that are used to sell foods. One of the Sforas Lahakol there is if you're going to throw it out right away. So what is the basis for leniency? So we start with an Igbus Moshe and Sforas 60, that since they're only designated for one-time use, and then Rav Moshe adds that even though they theoretically could be used a few times, again, the aluminum thickness is not so strong to prevent leaks. So after like two or three, whatever, four times tops, it's going to already start, cut with a knife or bend it, etc. It's going to start leaking. So it's not really roy for more permanent use. So he suggests that is also considered part of this same Shaila. And he quotes a Rambam. Post can basically quote two Rambams in this regard. One is a Rambam about making a kli out of a dried esrog, carving it out, or some kind of lefes or delas. So he writes that it's not makabel tumah. It's tohar, because na makabel tumah, because it will not be durable for any significant period of time. So I see from here a klal in Hilchas Kalim of Tumas Kalim that it's na makabel tumah. So based on this, he says the same thing will be true for Tevilas Kalim. It's unclear from Ramosha about what is that jump from Hilchas Kalim to Hilchas Tevilas Kalim. Is it because he's going with the approach of the Shev Yaakov, which is that it depends on Tumas Kalim, and since it's not Makabel Tumas such a kli, so it wouldn't be Chayiv and Tevilas Kalim either, because here we have Tumas Akum, that is required to be removed by entering into the Jewish house. Or is it, as the Chalukas Binyamin, I quoted here in Source 62 notes, that maybe it's just a common denominator. The reason that it's not Makabel Tumah is because it's not called a kli, and if it's not called a kli, then it certainly can't be called a kli sud. So it's not necessarily that Ramosha is assuming it's dependent on the laws of Tumah Vatara, but this particular reason why it's not makabel tumah is something more fundamental, that it's not a kli, and that not being a kli is going to be relevant to Hilchos Tevilas Kalim as well, even if that's not dependent on all the rules of Tumah Vatara. Nafkamina, let's say a very gigantic kli, certainly a kli, so if it's not makabel tumah, you potter, or if it's mechubel lekarka, relevance to the electric shaila we discussed earlier in terms of if you assume that it's also mechubel lekarka. So one svara is that it's not makabel tumah. Another svara is that it's not a kli. And a third svara, mentioned by the Minchas Yitzchak, based on a sefer called the Gidulei Tara, is that it's a shimush arai. And a shimush arai, something that's only used in a very temporary, haphazard way, is not sufficient to consider that vessel to be considered a kli sud. Possible nafkamina between these various approaches is how far do you take this? As I'm sure you've all heard, there is a serious shaila in the poskim as to whether or not one is allowed to use a throwaway utensil for Kiddush, for Avdola. Meikle view says, it's a kli. You throw it out, okay, but it's still a kli. And the Machma view says, no, it's not called a kli, because it's a throwaway, it's not called a kli. Reb Moshe, possibly Shitoso, although it's hard to know, in a separate tshuva, not addressing the issue of Tevilas Kalim, but addressing the issue of Kiddush, very much is unhappy about making Kiddush on such a utensil, because it considers it not to be a kli. Tetz Eliezer is Meikle, and says it certainly is a kli. In the end of that tshuva, Reb Moshe writes, if you don't have anything else, so maybe it could be Meikle. What is the maybe it could be Meikle? Is it that because maybe it is called a kli, and if it is called a kli, does that impact Tevilas Kalim? That maybe we should be machmer on it? So it's not 100% clear. As we mentioned earlier, the Sefer Tevilas Kalim Kol Chosa quotes several significant other Gedolei Poskim. I summarized there in the very last line in these sources, on page 13. Very prominent among them are Eliashiv, that throwaway Kalim Archaiv. And one of the svaras just mentioned by the Sefer Tevilas Kalim Kol Chosa is that maybe we could distinguish between the cases that the Rambam is talking about. Another case they give is a case of a keren, a horn. The Rambam writes that if you intend to use it permanently, it's makabel tumah. If you intend to throw it away, then it's not makabel tumah. So it says, in the case of the horn, that's a naturally made kli. So there, in order to make it into a halachic kli, you have to have a permanent use. But if you actually manufacture something, meirosh, with intention that it should be a kli, even though because it's so cheap, you throw it out, so maybe that doesn't stop it from being a kli. And also somewhat of a metzias question, that if you're very gentle and delicate, you theoretically could have an aluminum pan that you use for months and months and months. That's something that people do in dormitories. So bottom line, Rav Eliashiv paskin that it is chayiv, but to dip it without a bracha in light of the other angles for leniency. And what I collected, again, just from the Sefer Tevilas Kalim Kol Chosa, is that Rav Moshe and Rav Minchas Yitzchak, the Chalukas Yaakov, Rav Shlomo Zalman Oibach, the Shraga HaMeir, Rav Vosner, and the Chalukas Binyamin are all exempted from Tevila. And the ones who hold this chayiv are Rav Eliashiv, Rav Nissim Karelitz, and Rav Nosson Kupshitz. The smoother kula is when you're only using it once. What if you actually are using it multiple times? So it sounds like Rav Moshe would allow you to use it multiple times if it can't be used for more than a few times. Other posts can mamish cut it at one. They say if you're using it once, you're putter, and then you'd have to throw it out right away. And if you want to use it more than once, then you're chayiv from the beginning, because you're already designating it as a multiple-use kli, and therefore is called a kli, but only to dip without a bracha, because of the svar of Moshe. There's another reason to dip without a bracha, because of aluminum. That's also another factor to come in here, to be mekel, even though they're svar as lakan alakan. There's a third situation, again, first situation where it's a flimsy utensil, and you only use it once. So most poskim hold, you don't have to dip. Second situation is the same flimsy kli, but you're going to use it multiple times. But Moshe seems to be makel on that. Others are machmer on that. There's another situation which is hard to be makel on, and that is they have sometimes like turkey pans, which are made of much thicker aluminum. And that really could last a very, very long time. But because it's not as expensive as a regular pot, and for convenience, people use it and they throw it out. So is that also called a throwaway that where people really could use it multiple times and it's made thick enough to be able to do that? Or is that also subject to this debate? So Rabbi Tendler, and when he was giving shiurim on this, he thought that there is much more grounds for stringency and one should dip those, at least without a bruch. Well, the more so if you intend to use it multiple times. Then the Sefer Tevilas Kelim V'Chasa Paskin said, if you intend to use it multiple times with such a kli, you actually should make a bracha. Again, I would hesitate to make a bracha since it's aluminum. And aluminum is a new metal, and that we saw earlier is a machlokas among the poets. There are many other additional topics that have to be discussed, which time does not permit in this forum to go into. Since they're not as common, I didn't mention them, but certainly need to be studied. That's the issue of maimed, which we briefly alluded to, where you have the utensils primarily of one substance that's not chayiv in tefillah, but it has something that causes it to be able to stand or to be filled in, a hole, let's say it's patched in with metal. So that's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. And also the notion of umma kona b'shvach kli, to what extent do we say that if a utensil is made by a non-Jew but hired by a Jew, do we say that it becomes chayiv in tefillah because of the fact that he gains, according to one sheet that's a machlekes about this, some kind of monetary rights in the kli being an uman. So just briefly discuss something that's mentioned by Ramosha, that only applies to an uman, to an artisan who gets paid by the job, a kablan, but not to an employee. If you have a Jewish factory that has non-Jewish workers, so that's not going to be uman kona b'shvach kli, and therefore such a kli would not be chayiv. But again, this is something that needs to be discussed. If you have metal utensils or glass utensils that were already dipped and then somehow they have to be repaired by a non-Jew, to what extent is that going to have to be re-dipped? So that's something that needs to be analyzed, especially with manenu, whether we still say uman kona b'shvach kli. Okay, with this we conclude the Hashlamot, and there's certainly much more to be learned about this. Again, there's no substitute for going through these wonderful primary sources, the Torah Beis Yosef, Shulchan Aruch, the Gemaras, and Noisei Kelim, and the wonderful, wonderful recent Sfarim. We're blessed to live in an era where there's so many Sfarim that Malakdim from so many different places, and certainly subject to many different Machlokas Haposkims, which of course need Hachra, but the schus to be able to partner with Rabbi Zimmerman, to be able to restudy the sugya, to present it to the Talmidim aspiring Rabbanim.